Lester Bowie with the Brass Fantasy with In the Still of the Night. Lester Bowie, Ravi Best, Gerald Brazel, Joseph McGollahan on trumpets, Louis Benilia, Joshua Roseman, Gary Valente on trombones, Vincent Cheney on cornet, Bob Stewart, tuba, Vinnie Johnson on drums, and Victor C. Yuen on percussion. Well, hello, hello, hello. It is the 1st of April. How are you doing? And this is Lead Stories. You're listening to Utrice Lead. I want to finish off the discussion that we started last week, actually a bit before last week, but we got into it deeply enough last week. And first, I got to tell you, I was just stunned, really, by the reaction. I never got that many emails and posts ever about a particular program. It was just amazing to me. And it means that this is a subject that is resonating deeply with people. And so we have to pay attention to this issue of education. So today, the question I want to ask is, if not now, when? It is hard to tell, given the lackluster response from both the elected leadership and the electorate in the Black and Latino communities across the country, that there is a war against their children, and it is having, and it is intended to have, genocidal effect. That is not an exaggeration in my view. Because this has been going on for a very long time. But what is happening now, it is just so lethal in its planned effect. It is planned to completely wipe out the intellectual capacity, not just of our children, but of us as a people to survive. The Obama administration's educational policies are just mere recasts, and I'm being very kind, of previous administrations dedicated to the same purpose of educationally annihilating African American and Latino communities specifically. They're shutting the schools down by the hundreds across the country. They're dumbing down the children. There's an exodus of skilled teachers, skilled and dedicated teachers. They're chasing them out, using all kinds of ways to frustrate them, to overload them, to measure them by bizarre standards, to give them every reason to leave just out of sheer disgust and desperation. And under this president, under Barack Hussein Obama, it appears that he intends that part of the legacy of his administration would be ultimately the privatization of education. Because he's already well established and continues the previous administration's plan of the school-to-prison pipeline. Schools are merely the gathering places now for future inhabitants of the nation's prisons, future cogs in the wheels of a prison industrial complex. And in the middle of all of this, you would expect there would be one heck of a fight. This would be a fight to the, you take this thing to the mat. Take this president to the mat over the education, or what they call education, being delivered to the children in our cities. And yet they give him a free pass. He's black, you see. He's a brother. And there's a reluctance to criticize the brother because it's more important what happens to him than it is what is happening to millions of children under his watch. Barack Obama is responsible, and we need to have that said publicly and repeatedly. He's driving the stake through the hearts of black and Latino children and their parents and their communities. He has to be held responsible for that. And we have to be held accountable for the fact that we are sitting by and letting this happen. We are not making our voices heard. We are not fully vested in this fight. And we are letting the president and the party of which he is the titular head, the Democratic Party, letting them off the hook. We are cowards. It's not just the leadership. It's not the administration alone. It is the community. You look at any protest that has, in fact, occurred, and these protests are usually reactionary protests. These are protests that people mount after some kind of deleterious action has taken place. And you see only women out there, most of them, mostly women, fighting for their children. That is wrong. There's something seriously wrong with that. And we see a decision made as well. We have to deal with this with the progressive community, who basically have said by their conspicuous absence from this discussion, hey, that's your fight. We're not in it. The same people who say they're committed to justice and equality and all of that, at any given demonstration, as there was recently in Chicago and in Philadelphia, there's only a sprinkling of white people with a conscience who say, well, I ought to be present and accounted for. The women's movement takes no position. The allies are conspicuously absent. They have their fight. And this, I want to say, I understand it. I understand it. I don't agree with it, but I understand it and I note it well. The struggles that they are now waging and the rights being affirmed were delivered to these constituencies on the backs of people who were murdered and attacked and denied their civil rights for centuries. But it's okay if you opt out. don't blame people if they develop a long memory. What do we do about this president? Well, certainly we should speak up. And in a public way, we need to have the message conveyed to him, since privately it seems not to be working, that he is less than spectacular in his performance so far. Nothing on the table, nothing that he has listed as a priority has anything to do, really. There are no solutions included in all of these so-called initiatives that are now his priorities that have anything to do with the desperately situated Black and Latino communities of the United States of America. We tell him the issue is A. He says, no, that's not it. For political reasons, I am telling you the issue is B. And even as I reassign the order of priorities, I am careful to omit your unique concerns. Because it is not good for my political advancement. It is not good for my personal plans to use my office for your benefit. We'll get up and make wonderful speeches about standing on the shoulders of Black people. No, you're standing on our necks, Mr. President. You're standing on our necks. And the Black community ought to have absolutely no problem. No problem being vocal about it. We ought to have in our daily plan, something that we do every day to express our discontent with this administration. Not just discontent, that's a nice little word. Our outrage that this president chooses to be impotent. We supplied all of the backup he needed. We supplied him the authority to rule. We supplied him the confidence to do so. But he has punked out big time. You're going to tell us that the issue now is registration of guns. As if that has anything to do with the Black community. I already told you what the solution to gun violence in the Black community is. But he is not at all ready to take that on. Solving the problem of gun violence in the Black community means that you move, even in your area of Chicago, you move the joblessness rate of Black teenagers down from the 90% or so that we know exists in our communities. The other day they issued a poll. People themselves were so embarrassed about it. Rather than state the unemployment rate among teens, they stated the employment rate, which was 8%. There are nations that have been torn apart for something like that. The unemployment rate among adult African Americans is more than twice that, and that is a conservative figure, more than twice the rate of the standard unemployment rate in the United States. To solve the gun violence problem, you'll have to tackle corrupt police administrations. You'll have to tackle how it is that we have guns saturating our communities by manufacturers themselves. To solve the gun violence rate, you'll have to deal with housing. Affordable housing. You'll have to deal with commitment by the law enforcement community to get rid of that irritating phrase that I hate so much when I hear it. A known drug location. Only in the black communities and Latino communities do we have known drug locations. Obviously, if it's known, why are they still there? And you will have to do something, inevitably, about education, what is passing for education in our communities. He is not up to that. And it is useless now to wonder if he ever is going to be up to that. It is enough simply to take the evidence as it is and draw conclusions from that. He is not up to it, and or he is not interested. Either way, he's useless with respect to our urgent concerns. This is year number 5. We have suffered through more than half of his 2 terms. And the evidence is very clear. The constituency that created the possibility of his political life and that supported him, not because he has straight teeth and has a nice smile, but invested heavily in this president. Because the issues and concerns are so urgent, and that in some way they could feel good about having made a very good investment, because there would be evidence of some kind of return on it. That's not his concern. This managed president of ours has willingly become a hostage to concerns that are absolutely contradictory to our very survival and our well-being. That's the way he wants it. So we should concern ourselves with what's next. And what's next is constructing our own ways of dealing with our own problems. But we certainly must send the message. And you know, I told you what I think the message ought to be. The utter and complete destruction of the Democratic Party. Absolutely. It is an agent, a prime agent, in our misery, beyond Barack Obama. How many Democratic presidents have we elected who have delivered little or nothing, just pure symbolic gestures? Nothing that says, yes, you are, in fact, looking to create a more equitable situation in our society. Yes, you do understand the call for justice. Yes, you are humane. Yes, you are committed to human rights. I can't speak for all black folks, But I do know that the clamor has not been for frivolities. The cry has not been for silly little things that don't really matter. The cry has been consistent since our imprint here in the United States of America. It has been consistent. It is all about humanity and justice and equality and all the things you say that are embodied in the Judeo-Christian ethic that you say you hold so fast to. But you are conducting wave after wave after wave of war. You mean to have a genocidal effect. You mean to disable and to disempower generations of people. You mean it. And as we can see with our own eyes now, it matters not whether it's somebody white or somebody black in the White House. It doesn't matter. The system itself is indestructible. It has its own way of resisting our efforts to correct. Education was a primary objective, even of slaves. Even if they had to do all of this horrible work, even if they had to suffer, the hope always was that their children would see a better day. Even under the most extreme circumstances, that was what they hoped for. Even at the expense of their lives, they wanted their children to learn to read or write. This is not a casual interest, my friends. This is deep. And it's not something that started in the 1950s with Brown versus Board of Ed. There's documented history that from the 1600s, black people in this country have been striving for some degree of education. It's so important to them. Since the 1600s. The first schools or the first formalized methods of delivering education to the slaves' children came through their own efforts themselves, those who were able to read, and through all kinds of secret things they had to do to get that thing done. And then we had religious groups like the Quakers, and we had philanthropists taking their own personal initiative to respond on a humane level. So important was education. And then we had, even before the Constitution, we had this quest for education. Once formally formed as the United States of America, education did become important, but not for the children of slaves. And that is what I'm talking about as the consistent effort from then on to now. There will be no equality in education. And under this administration, they're saying there will be no education. We will shut down the schools before we give you an education. I talked about the president's secretary of education, Arne Duncan, who himself requires an education. All he has is a bachelor's degree in sociology. This is the man appointed by our learned and managed president. This would never, ever have occurred in any other person with a logical mind. You have a bachelor's degree, and that makes you qualified to set educational policy for the country? But it is a world in which skin privilege allows a number of things to be considered or not considered. But Mr. Duncan, the Secretary of Education, is a creature of the charter school movement. And under this president, under this managed president, the idea is to go all out, shut down as many schools as you can, facilitate the exodus of good teachers, dumb down the intellect of children, frustrate the efforts of their parents, and give them charter schools. In other words, this president has been selected as the person to privatize and commodify education even down to the elementary school level. That's his great accomplishment. I want to read you an editorial from the Chicago Tribune that it wrote on March the 25th. It says, "Unchain the charters." I'll read you some excerpts of it. I don't want to read you the entire thing. It's rather long. But it says, "Here is a haunting statistic that we cannot repeat too often. Of all the school districts in the United States, Chicago Public Schools has one of the longest waiting lists for admission to a charter school. There are 19,000 students on the list this year. That number has been rising since 2008. When 13,500 Chicago students languished on the wait list. Next year, there will be some 23,000 children waiting. Take a moment to absorb that number. 23,000 students hoping for better education than their neighborhood schools can deliver. That's 23,000 students and their parents eager for the same opportunity now given 51,000 children in Chicago and to tens of thousands of others across the country. All these kids want is the chance for a better education." Now, coincidental with this editorial is a poll taken of Chicagoans. What did this poll find? It found that more than 6 in 10 respondents, 63.7%, favor making it easier for charters to expand in neighborhoods where they are currently waiting lists for admission to charter schools. An even larger share, 67.9%, agree that it should be easier for charters to open in neighborhoods with underperforming schools. An impressive 6 in 10, that's 61.1%, favor a law that would empower parents to take control of a persistently failing school and hire a nonprofit education provider, usually a charter operator, to manage the school. That's the parent trigger law that has shaken the status quo in California. There's a push for such laws in 12 states at the moment. Now, that would seem a bit incomprehensible from the fact that you have 23,000 next year, and this year there are 19,000 children waiting for charter schools. And yet the city of Chicago is closing 54 schools with a plan to close even more. It has 124 schools in its crosshairs that it wants to pull the trigger on. 54 is just the first wave. And you see what the pattern is. The educational futures of these children are not important. These children are just numbers. We take them from here and we put them over there where they can make money for some private entity. We frustrate them. We shut down the schools and give them no option but to say, all right, we'll take the charter schools. Just give them to us already. And the very people whose educational futures are on the line will be the very ones clamoring for it. And it's all engineered. It's all orchestrated to produce precisely that. You shut down the schools and you create a vacuum. In other words, in the marketing parlance, it would be you increase the demand by shutting down the supply. And that, in turn, makes people make crazy choices. Because it would be better. I don't care what. I just want a school. I don't care what kind of school it is. Good school, bad school, charter school, private school. I don't care. I just need to have my child in a school. What do you have? Well, we have charter schools here. Oh, good. Sign up my kid. That is the intention of the Obama administration via the same guy he plucked out of Chicago, who was doing this work, who began the process of shutting down the schools and giving rise to the charter school. And it's not because charter schools are better. It is not because they're producing better results. It is not because they know how to deliver education in a better way. It is because somebody makes money, and the heck with the educational futures of these children. They don't play. They're not playing this game. This game is not being played in white America, not with white children. Our black president says, you know what? It's okay. This is a good thing. A school is not performing, we shut it down. That is his version of race to the top. School is not working, we just shut it down. And that whole plan is working hand in glove with the real estate interests who come in right behind that and reclaim those parcels of land that are now vacant in cities targeted for redevelopment, having reached a bottoming out level. New York City. All the schools that are closed in black and Latino communities. And immediately that real estate is retrieved by the city, who then suddenly, it disappears into the hands of real estate people cozy with the city, and they have their hands on excellent properties. In New York City, under Mayor Bloomberg, the city would have cast off about 140 odd properties. In fact, more than that. More than that. And it's all done by the, how should I say, the devaluation. It's not even an adequate word. The system just sees these children and their parents and their communities like petri dishes full of bacteria. They have to be contained. As long as they're contained, it's okay. In New York City, Mayor Bloomberg is closing 22 schools this year, but 142 have already been shut down or phased out since he took office in 2002. So we see the program. We see it. We see the program. They're not hiding it, by the way. You would think that they would have the decency, at least, to be ashamed. But shame, they don't, you have to be human to have shame. They have to be human to have shame. I'll take a break and we'll come back to your questions right after this. This is Eutrice Lead. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm encouraging you to spread the word and make PRN your go-to station for substantive discussion. And I want you especially to tout the benefits of listening to Lead Stories. We'll take your calls at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Joe from New Jersey. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
I have to agree with everything that you've been saying for the last couple of weeks. You've been like batting a thousand. I just want to make a remark that last week I heard the mayor, I believe it is, of Chicago talking about he was going to close the 54 schools in Chicago to save $1 billion over 10 years. That's
right.
That's $100 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, the president, he was in the Middle East talking about he was going to give $200 million to the Syrian rebels.
I've got to refer you to the show we did with exactly that topic. Go to the archives. We talked about that at length here. In fact, on the same day that the president was going, we noted the fact that he was going to Israel, meeting with Netanyahu, to assure the Israeli government of unqualified, unconditional support for its military and domestic development. So, yes, your point is well taken, and you're trying now to take over my job.
No. That's going to be quite difficult to say, really.
What I mean by that, Joe, is that we're thinking on the same wavelength, really.
Yes, we are, really. But it's easy because this is so obvious. I was just watching Andrea Mitchell on TV, and she had the senator from Tennessee. And Senator Clark was talking about how the president of North Korea is a young, unstable individual, and he's got a country full of economic problems. And he failed to mention the fact that, you know, they have real problems because there are a group of countries that are oppressing this country, in my opinion. And it seems like the president of our country is really dangerous to double speak in reverse logic. That every time he speaks, it seems like he's breaking down my psychological immune system because it's not based on logic. It's all propaganda, you know? Mm-hmm. And the only thing I also like to say, if you don't mind, is that the country of Miramar just recently celebrated the fact that they have a privatized newspaper. Well, if you look at this country, privatized newspapers, you know, they're propaganda mouthpieces also. So this rush to privatization of everything, to me, indicates that the president, he's kind of biased against the public sector. The president mentioned that he was going to have an investment, a investment bank to handle the infrastructure of the country. And he emphasized that it was going to be a partnership with private industry. He's addicted to private industry. And I think the president really needs help to expand his consciousness, really, because the private sector has failed in terms of satisfying or fulfilling their responsibilities to the country.
Well, my view would be that the president is addicted to whatever he is told to be addicted to.
That's true enough, too, really. And it doesn't really matter who he's hearing from.
Right. It doesn't matter. So thank you, Joe. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Really, take a look at the archive, and you'll see the show that I'm referring to, and download it and listen at your leisure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot. You know, it's amazing how people could catch on to these things, and the administration thinks that they're kidding people. They really do believe that. Since 1785, education has been formally funded, but of course, for white children in this society. And that has been the advantage. People talk about, well, what are the advantages and disadvantages, and you want equality and all that? Yes, we do. Because one part of America has been given a substantial lead on the other part of America, or the rest of America, which, as I said before, it ties into the notion of white supremacy, which is really what the government insists on aiding and abetting. I mean, when our president can go to Newtown, and again, this is not that anybody should be killed, anybody's child should be killed, nobody wants that. But it becomes a problem. And here's an opportunity for him to say, all right, we will address this problem. Well, look what we got. And I commented on it every time we saw the meeting. They're having yet another meeting. There are only white people in the room. Kay from New York, thank you for joining us.
How are you, Chris? How have you been?
Fine, thank you.
Good. You know, it's amazing when we constantly talk about Obama that most Americans don't realize the type of harm that he's doing in building and growing this empire. In that, when it's all said and done, I think that we're going to suffer in the long run, just like certain things that Clinton did, we're still suffering for this day. I mean, I just think that, you know, we don't even really see the ramifications on what's going to happen. You know, like when we talk about the sequester. It's really just a different word for austerity measures that are trying to be placed in this country in a way. They just had to rechange the word based on what was going on over in Europe and the effects that it was having in Europe. So they had to use that word here. But it seems like, you know, most Americans don't equate the two or don't see this two in a similar fashion. But basically, they're doing some of the same thing.
Yes, but at the same time, we need to, this issue of education ought to be the make or break issue. Everything should ride on it. That's how important it ought to be right now, too, especially these distressed communities.
But see, Eutrice, where we as a community also have failed and where we have been failed was who he appointed as the Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan. He had no business being in that position. You know what I mean? Because there's no real policy coming out of the education department other than trying to turn everything into a form of privatization through these charter schools.
Well, we've talked about the fact that this president has included in his cabinet, he seems to have gone for the lowest common denominator in terms of qualification.
Right.
Hillary Clinton was by no means qualified to be Secretary of State. She was Secretary of State. The person he appointed, Jack Lew, to the Treasury is not qualified to head up the Treasury, but that's where he is. So, you know, you have the president basically taking orders from whomever and plugging in people for, to form the invisible but permanent government within his administration. At the same time, the question still remains with the community. Is this issue important enough to finally raise your voices, put your feet in the street about it, and say, this will not happen. It will not happen. It will cost the Democratic Party, and it ought to, and it will cost the president. And we are moving against him. This is war over the children. I mean, you could attack innocent kids and short-circuit their lives like this without even a blink of an eye and get away with it because people think, oh, well, he's a black guy. We ought to give him a break. No. No.
Eutrice, could you clarify one thing for me?
Go ahead.
When the president talked about he put money into the budget for HBCU schools. Now, from my understanding, what I've been hearing, I haven't really totally investigated, there is a great deal of students that because of this money that he placed in the HBCUs are now having to withdraw from college because they're having trouble getting the loans that this money was supposed to give to them because of the credit of their parents who are, for some reason, responsible for taking out the loans. I don't know how true that is and how much that's really in play, but I was wondering if maybe you could clarify that because that seems to me to be something just as criminal as what he's doing with education, because a lot of students are now not being able to stay in college. And I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you. Well, the federal government is not as obligated as such. I'm using this in a loose term. It's not as obligated as such to providing or assisting with higher education, although since 1785 through what is known as the Land Ordinance Act and the Northwest Ordinance of 1787, the federal government agreed under those two conditions to supply land for the HBCUs, the historically black colleges and universities. Now, that is going to the schools for operative costs. It does not take into consideration the cost to the student. And the students these days have to, you know, bear more and more responsibility for their education, not just at the historically black colleges and universities, but in college generally. Student loans, as you know, are a huge issue. And again, in the Obama administration, we had the predecessor, Jack Lew himself, who had just ended his stint at Citigroup, which was referred as the preferred place for students to get their loans. And now he comes back to the White House having received from Citigroup a bonus of $940,000 for that. So the president's administration is just riddled with people who are severely compromised. I'm saying that in the nicest way. So, yes, the burden is on individual students to provide for their tuition. The cost of education now has gone up, and colleges and universities are not expected to undergo any examination as to whether the costs that they, the fees that they charge actually are in line with what they deliver in terms of education. That's another fight. We have, for lack of a better term, we have foundational issues to deal with, and that is the fight for the public school system all across the country that is basically targeting our young children, for making them just cogs in a wheel. No longer human beings, no longer a consideration about their educational futures. They just could be made to fit into a pre-designed plan that has nefarious intentions, and we ought to publicly express our distaste for it and move in a very, very vocal way against the president and see to it that we make the Democratic Party pay for this kind of transgression. It should never, ever be forgotten or forgiven. Well, that brings us to the end of our program today. Much in store this week that I hope you will find interesting. But we'll get to that, of course, as the week goes. I want to thank you so much. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories, at gmail.com, on Facebook, at Lead Stories with Eutrice Lead. And coming up next is Richard Martin with Wake Up Call. I want to thank you so much for the pleasure and privilege of your esteemed company. See you tomorrow.